Hey, this is Tom Waddle. Thanks for listening to the Waddle and Sylvie podcast brought to you by Miller Lite, the presenting sponsor of the 2020 ESPN 1000 Virtual Fantasy Football Championship.
ESPN 1000, Chicago's home for sports.
You're listening to Waddle and Sylvie.
See what we're up to.
See them on Twitch at ESPN 1000 Chicago.
All right, the Cubs just went final. They lost to the lowly Pirates by a score of 6-2. They were going for the sweep. They settled for 2 out of 3.
Can't win them all.
Alec Mills was a losing pitcher. Ugh. He continues to just show you that this is why
you got some rotation problems.
Well, I think you got more than that, but yes, you're right. If you look at the Cubs rotation now, and at the final, I don't know if I said it, is 6-2. You have 2.5 starters, maybe 3 if John Lester can get right. You have Kyle Hendricks and Yu Darvish. John Lester has been up and down. Quintana is out. Chatwood is out. Alec Mills isn't really that good. He's got a 5.5 ERA right now.
You can't rely on him, and you can ask him to eat some innings, but you can't rely on him to give you a quality start when you need it.
You have a bullpen that there are still some Cubs fans who on Twitter are still trying to sell me like that the Cubs have righted the ship with the bullpen. And I don't buy that. I mean, there are a couple of guys who have, like Jeffers has given you way more than you ever thought he was going to give you this year. But I'm still not sold on Rowan Wick. Craig Kimbrell, I'm not sold on. I don't know about the lefties that they have. Kyle Ryan, I you know how I feel about him, and they just acquired a couple. But I think when you have starting pitching issues, you still have bullpen issues, and you still have an offense that the talent is greater than the sum of the parts. I don't think that, like, again, I'm in like with my baseball team. They're 22-15, I think, now. I don't love my baseball team. They're going to get to the postseason, and I get it. Anything can happen in this year's postseason. But to me, when you evaluate this team piece by piece, there's not really truly anything terrific about this team.
Yeah, I mean, again, the question has always been, despite them getting off to that great start, which was what? 13-3.
Yeah,
it was just how damn good is this team. Now, you have scored a bunch of runs recently prior to today. Yesterday, you scored 8. The day before, 8, 10, 5.
You played the Pirates.
5 and a loss to the Reds. 3, you won that game 3-0 thanks to Darvish. You scored 5 and a loss to Cincinnati. You scored 6 and a loss to Detroit. So I would say to you that the offense has been better over the last 7, 8 days collectively. I'd be concerned about what you're throwing after Darvish at this point.
Right.
And certainly, I mean, Hendricks as well. But
let me give you a good example of, like, what drives me. What has driven me crazy, like you asked me the other day, Sylvie, did this weekend against the Reds change your mind about the way they feel about your baseball team? Because they didn't look good on paper. What was it, a split? Was it a 4-game series?
Yes.
They went 2-2. And the Reds have been bad, bad. And I didn't think that they would be, Waddle, but you were criticizing your team a weekend, and you were right. But and you asked me, do I feel differently about my baseball team after the 4 games? I go, I haven't felt differently about my baseball team for the last 3 years.
Right.
That I just feel like they're good, they're just not great. Today I think they were up 2-0 against the Pirates. Is that what it was? I got the box score right in front of me.
Yes. And then the Pirates scored 4 in the bottom of the third.
So they were up 1-0, and in the third inning, they had 2 runners on. I think it was first and third. And Chris Bryant was at the plate. Kipnis was at third. Chris Bryant pulled one to third base, a grounder to third base. Kipnis, really good running, base running, stayed right on third base. The third baseman tried to tag Kipnis out. He was safe, then double-clutched and threw the ball away trying to throw Bryant out at first. That's how Kipnis came around to score, making it 2-0. They still had nobody out, Waddle.
Yeah.
Nobody out. 2 runners on for the heart of the order of Rizzo, Baez, Schwarber. So Bryant already grounded into that fielder's choice. That was an error. The next guy, Rizzo, grounded to third base, didn't get the runner home. Javi Baez swung at a 59-foot pitch and struck out. And then Schwarber struck out on a ball in the dirt. You got one run in an inning where they handed you a run, and you had two on and nobody out for the heart of your order.
They, against the
lowly Pirates.
Right. They were 1-for-9 as a team with runners in scoring position, and they left 9 on base.
And this is a team that you could step on their throats. You've beaten them 2 games in a row. Heart of the order. You sweep them. You get the hell out of Pittsburgh. But you don't capitalize there. You don't score the rest of the day. And then the pitching gives up a lot.
Some dude named JT Brubaker gave it to you.
Yeah.
Gave it to you. You couldn't do anything.
So, and that's sort of, and like you say, the offense, I mean, Chris Bryant's hitting .178. Javi Baez is hitting .94. Wilson Contreras is hitting .217. You know, if it wasn't for Ian Happ and Jason Hayward.
Fouled off a pitch, and the ball bounced into the dirt and came back up and hit him in the head. He left with a bruise above his right eye.
Contusion is what they said. So without Happ and Hayward, you'd really be in trouble. But again, I mean, like with my team, I think this is the same old Cubs team that's good, not great, and that they're not going anywhere in October.
I think that's a good description of your baseball team.
Now, what about the Whites? And if you want to weigh in, 312-332-3776, because if you look at the Cubs in three facets of the game, if you look at hitting, pitching, and bullpen, you know, you split the pitching up. Are they great in any of the three?
No. Cubs are not. No.
And
you
so
have one ace who's been as good or better than anyone in all of baseball so far this year.
Right.
But that's one spot out of what is traditionally a 5-man rotation.
And now you don't even know. Now you're playing all these doubleheaders against the Cardinals. Where are you finding the starting pitching to fill these games?
That's a good question for David Ross in the postgame today.
Yeah. So 312-332-3776. For the White Sox, Waddle, and Black, I know you're a Sox fan, and you were saying, look, there's a big litmus test.
Yeah.
They were able to grab that game one, which is huge. They were outplayed in those last two games. There's nothing you can say about those last two games other than the Twins completely outplayed them in every facet. The defense was sketchy. It wasn't the Sox' best 24 hours or 30-hour period.
Sox looks bad in the last two games.
I still believe that this team is a work in progress. They're young. They're learning. And I still think that the arrow is pointing way up. And I told you this with a lot of the comps with 2015. I brought this up the other day. There was a series where the Cubs lost to the Cardinals, and Cardinal fans in July were chirping to me. And the Cardinals looked like they were still the class of the division because of the way they played at Wrigley Field against the Cubs. And I said, not so fast on paper. The Cubs are still a really good team, and they're coming, and their best days are ahead of them. And sure enough, a few months later, they beat them in the postseason. I'm not guaranteeing you that the Sox are going to beat the Twins in the postseason. All I'm telling you is this team still being young, still learning, still trying to figure things out, that unlike the Cubs, who have shown you the same sort of warts for the last 4 years, that this team is still learning and this team still has its best days in front of them. And I wouldn't take 2 days and take them out of a contention role.
By the way, the loss to the Twins on Tuesday, you still got a nice outing from Keuchel. He only went 5 innings, but he gave up 0 earned runs.
Right.
So, I mean, you were still in that game.
He had a bad stomach, right? And you took him out early?
Yeah. So, I mean, you were still in that game.
No,
yesterday was just a mess.
I get the comparison. I would just say that this is not that, though, with the Chicago White Sox, because now on the season, they have played the Twins and the Indians twice. And against both of those teams, they're 2-4. So the reason why I was hyping up the last 3 days for the White Sox was because you've beat up on a lot of bad teams surrounding this Twin series, and now you have the Royals and you have the Pirates, so I'm sure you will fatten up some more in the next week or so. But the point that I was making over the weekend and on the baseball show and to you guys is that this was a series you needed to make a point that you are here officially to compete for the playoffs. And I get it. They'll probably make the playoffs and everything will be okay. And you're right, Sylvie. The arrow is pointing up for this team.
And but maybe they learned from now. These games now. But
well, but it was
not,
sloppy,
not now
four,
in September.
Four errors last night?
Very sloppy. I'm telling you, you're right. I do know what you're saying. Like, what you saw in these 30 hours could not have made you feel gray. I'm just saying 30 hours on September 1st and 2nd or whatever it was. Yeah, September 1st and 2nd doesn't mean that they're going to get beat on October 10th.
Well, you also had to feel a little itchy and scratchy with Lopez taking the ball.
Yeah, it was bad. Yeah.
It's been something we've talked about for quite some time. Like, again, this is a team that's ahead of schedule in some ways. So there are going to be moments like we saw last night. But overall, like, I'll take that lineup all day, every day. The top of their rotation has been really good. Their bullpen is usually very good. Like, right now, I think the White Sox are a better, more complete team than the Cubs. Both of these teams...
Well, and the bullpen is certainly better.
Of course. I think both of these teams have beaten up... The step one towards being a really good team is taking care of the opponents that you need to take care of. Beat the teams you're supposed to be. And both of these teams have done that. But it's fair criticism, Chris, that when you do step up to the plate against better teams... Until you get over that hump, you're a team with potential.
Well, and remember the conversation we had on Monday. The conversation on Monday was, look at all the power rankings. Oh, there's all this disrespect from the power rankings. I'm doing an Abdallah voice right there because he's the one that
you're
said...
You're up 20,000 feet.
Well, he said that there was this great disrespect towards the White Sox. Well, the Sox have just proven to us maybe they're not ready to be the fourth best team in baseball. Maybe they're not ready to be up there with the Dodgers. With the Rays, with the Athletics. Maybe they're not, but they're still good. They can still do something this year, but maybe not just yet. And they
but
will
maybe they could
Indians.
Be ready by, but the, can't they maybe be ready by October?
Well,
Cease is coming into his own.
Dunning
he won't
has
pitch
been good.
Lopez. Dunning in two starts has shown you everything you've wanted to see.
Now, listen, they're going to play the Twins and the Indians one more time each before we get to the playoffs. They also face the Cubs again, and that's going to be a good series. If they play well in those series leading into the playoffs, yeah, I will be confident that they can do some damage.
The evaluation process, the true evaluation process begins Monday, September 14th when they start a four-game series at home with the Minnesota Twins.
Yes.
Then they go to Cincinnati for three. That's a breather. Then they go to Cleveland for four. That's going to be a tester. And then you come home to host the Chicago Cubs. So over the course of that stretch...
We'll know who they are.
You'll know who they are. And they, you know what? I expect them to get into the postseason, but you'll have a better idea how dangerous they would be in the postseason at that point.
You should have said that Cubs series a breather, too, based off last time.
They did take it to the Cubs. I mean, you asked how they played against good teams. They dominated the Cubs in two out of those three games.
Are the
Chris.
Cubs a good team?
Well, so Sylvie, that brings
they're a good
it,
team, not
that,
a great team.
Well, it brings it full circle, right? Because of the way that Sylvie feels about his Cubs, right? Because if you say, well, the Sox beat up on a good team in the Cubs, well, hey, Sylvie, what do you think of the Cubs? Yeah, they're okay. I'm in like, not in love. So that's kind of where we're at.
3-3-2-3-7-7-6. Cubs fans, how do you feel about your team? They're going to make the postseason. I get a lot of tweets. Sylvie, stop complaining. You're being negative about the Cubs. They're this record, and they're going to get to the postseason. With Darvish fronting the staff, anything can happen in a short series. I get it. I can't imagine that this offense and that bullpen is going to take you far. And like Waddle said, maybe the biggest issue is that you've got two starters now, maybe three. If Lester starts turning it around.
Yeah, I'm not buying that whole line of crap of Sylvie, you know, you need to take it easy because this team's getting to the postseason. Yeah, they're going to get to the postseason, but that's not where your level of expectation is set with this team.
Right.
You have a $200 million payroll.
Right, and this is the last dance. Even Rizzo has said, like, hey, it's probably the last year before they make major changes. The White Sox, this is the first of many. So, or at least the first year of them coming into their own.
Oh, by the way, as you've said, the Cubs still they're making the same mistakes or they're weak in the same spots continually.
Do you believe the White Sox are a World Series contender this year? That's one of the Toyota Twitter polls. Abdallah suggested that one, and boy, Abdallah, you got even money on this. Yes, 50.9% of the vote. No. 49.1% of the vote.
That's a good Vegas poll right there.
That is. You'd be great in Vegas. 3-3-2-3-7-7-6. Not on a balloon, though. If you want to weigh in on our baseball teams, we're talking about that. And then we'll get you some plays on gambling from Doug Kazarian at 4:30.
Waddle and Sylvie.
Podcasts are ready on the all-new ESPN Chicago app.
ESPN 1000, Chicago's home for sports.
All right, talking some baseball in the wake of the Sox losing 2 out of 3 from the Twins. And the Cubs took 2 out of 3 from Pittsburgh, but they lost an ugly game today, 6-2. And as Waddle said, Ian Happ had to leave the game.
Yeah.
He fouled one off, and then it bounced up and hit him in the face.
In the face!
Contusion.
Have you guys beat a really good pitcher this year other than Trevor Bauer? I was thinking about this at the break, and I tried to go through everything, but... Like, is there a pitcher, like one of the top line pitchers in baseball that you're like, oh, yeah, we got the best of him?
Well, who'd they face against Cleveland?
They did not face Bieber.
They didn't face Bieber, I know that.
I think they faced Carrasco,
right?
His name?
Yeah, yes, yeah. And because they missed the Clevenger and Plesac because of the suspension.
Exactly. Like, you've dodged all, you faced Sonny Gray and they beat you.
Right.
You beat Trevor Bauer. For Cleveland, you faced, what's his name? Adam Plutko?
Sounds right, yes.
I mean, he got tagged.
That's the thing about the Cubs lineup. Like, when you look at the Cubs lineup and you say to me, okay, Sylvie, here's the lineup. Ian Happ, do you like him? Oh, yeah, I like Ian Happ. Chris Bryant, do you like him? Yes, I like Chris Bryant. Anthony Rizzo, you like him? Yes, a lot. Do you like Javi? Yes, yes. Schwarber? Oh, yeah, that's my left fielder. Contreras? Hell yeah, he's batting .600. That's awesome.
Yeah, well, he's batting .217.
Hayward, I'm just telling you, like, as a player, do I like them as offensive players?
Sure.
And I'm saying yes to all of them. Like, I'm not saying just zooming in on this year, on their numbers. But then whenever you line them up and you expect them...
They should be better than what they are.
They don't produce like you think. They take turns being good and being bad and just not getting it's like what even if it's a random game, like people, well, clutch isn't really a stat. And, you know, hitting with runners at scoring position is too much of a sample size. I've watched for 3 years. This team doesn't score for the guys who I like as much as I think they should as a team.
The Cubs collectively hit 256 home runs last year. Do you know where that ranked in all of Major League Baseball?
Fourth or fifth?
Sixth. Yeah, they were sixth. Their on-base percentage was .333. That ranked eighth. Their OPS ranked .785. That ranked eighth. You're right. They should scare the whiz out of you more frequently than they do.
Nick in Bridgeport, you're on ESPN 1000. Hey, Nick.
Hey, guys. Thanks for taking the call. You know, this Sox team has the potential to win the division and make noise in the playoffs, but that is not going to happen if Robert keeps hitting seventh with a guy like Mazzara hitting behind him. Ricky, he's been shuffling these lineups all season long, and Robert has no protection. You got Encarnacion hitting .170. And Mazzara, which, you know, has been well documented, he's not doing what we brought him here to do, but he's hitting .270. You know, Robert needs to be seeing better pitches, and he needs to be higher up in the lineup. Your thoughts on Ricky and his lineup?
Well, I think you're absolutely right, Nick. And not only for the reasons you stated, I want Luis Robert getting to the plate as many times as possible.
More frequently.
Like, I know he's young, and I know that they want to ease him in. But I think it's ridiculous. He's one of your best players, and he's got to get to the plate many more times. So,
I think your rotation is going to be what ultimately stops you in this season. I mean, you can score a ton of runs. I just don't know. You know, Cease has done some really good things. Okay, you're starting to be able to trust him consistently. Do you have enough depth in your rotation to go deep?
Well, it depends on... Dane Dunning, who just started twice.
So it's going to be a fun run. I mean, it just is. I mean, like I just told you who they're playing starting September 14th. Like, you're going to know who the hell your team is when the postseason begins, and I feel strongly your team's going to be competing in the postseason. But you'll have a better feel for just how dangerous you think they are after playing some of these more competitive series.
It's going to be a weird postseason, too, with whether it's going to be a bubble, no home, like no crowds, so there's no home field advantage. So does it matter if you're the 2 seed or the 4 seed or the 6 seed?
No, I don't think so.
Does it matter?
No.
John in Rolling Meadows, you're on ESPN 1000. Hey, Johnny.
Hey, guys. Thanks for taking the call. Hey, you're doing a great job getting over your problem there, Sylvie. I'm proud of you. Stick with it.
Thanks, John.
And good luck to you and your family with this. Huh? It's tough.
Final treatment tomorrow. Last round of chemo.
Great, great. I applaud you, and so does the rest of my family, for sure.
Thank you.
You know, as far as the White Sox go, I've been telling all of my friends, you know, this year it's a learning experience for these guys, learning how to handle yourself on the road as a major leaguer and learning how to deal with situations as a ball club as well as individually. During the off season, they have to make a few moves. I think they need another starter, get a left fielder out there, put Jimenez in the DH role next year where he'll grow to be comfortable. I think the addition of Dyson's big. I think you can use him. He's a stolen base expert. He can get on and steal for you. Not a power hitter, but you don't want a power hitter in the leadoff spot. You want somebody they'll get on. But, yeah, I think our bullpen is pretty good. But I think he's got to get away from using Cordero now for about a week if he wants him around down the stretch because his arm's not made out of rubber, and I'm afraid that it's going to fall off if they keep depending on him the way he has. So other than that, I think they'll do okay, but they're not ready to sweep the Twins yet. I don't think this ball club defensively can do that. But offensively, if they cut down on their swings and quit trying to hit every pitch into orbit and just get on base and get runs any way you can, I think they'll be okay.
I think you caught the Twins at the wrong time, too. Like, they had been
worse.
Well,
they were just coming off a losing streak, and that's
big. Isn't that the right time?
Maybe, but it's also for a good team. You have to know at some point they've had all they can stands, and they can't stands no more, and you're going to get a better effort from them. So, that wasn't the case in game one. But
they got Buxton back. They got Donaldson back last night.
That's true. Jay and Aurora, you're on ESPN 1000. Hey, Jay.
Hey, guys. Thanks for taking the call. The question was asked, like, does it really matter without a crowd being there, whether or not you're the home team or not? From that standpoint, no. But I think one thing that kind of matters is that you get to bat last, right? So whatever happens in the top of the ninth, you get the bat last. So if you give up a run in a tied game or something like that, I think that can matter. But something from last night's Sox game that really is kicking me off, like with any baseball game that I watch, is the way that the umpire's strike zone changes in a game. The Sox played horribly last night and should have lost, but some of those runs that were scored were scored after, like, 3-2 counts that would have ended an inning were a walk or two check swings that weren't called. And again, the Sox didn't play well enough to win, but there's enough time in games repeatedly that umpire strike zones compared to that box that they're showing you does not match up, and it's altering games.
Jay, it's funny you mention that because I feel, and maybe I'm just hypersensitive because I'm watching things more closely because I was starved for sports. I have to tell you, I think these umpires are missing more calls, balls and strikes calls, than ever before.
Welcome to my world of robot umps.
Don't you? I'm with you.
You're right.
I mean, hasn't this year? I don't know. I'm sure that somebody has caught is following this and has statistics on this. But this year feels like, and I'm watching all the Cubs games. I'm watching all of the Sox games. And I'm not saying there's a partiality being shown for or against either. I'm saying it feels like there is more than a handful of calls that are incorrect by the home plate umpire much more often now than before.
And inconsistent. It's just, well, one time they're bad. This is a strike, another ball. It's bad.
Are you thinking it's worse, the same, or do you feel like it's worse? I feel like it's worse this year.
Me too. Me too. And we could talk about that with the NBA. There were some interesting calls last night in the NBA that I want to get to a little bit later on in the show. But right now, we're talking win totals in the National Football League. Black asked an interesting question yesterday, and I want to ask that to Doug Kazarian coming up next. If you don't know Doug, Doug does the television show on ESPN on gambling, and they just moved the show to Vegas. He's legit. He's awesome. And the question is, does the Bears' win total change depending on who the starting quarterback is? We'll ask that to Doug Kazarian coming up next.
Waddle and Sylvie, weekdays, 2 to 6.
Follow on Twitter at Waddle and Sylvie and at TWaddle87. ESPN 1000.
Chicago's home for sports.
All right, Waddle, you have become such a huge gambler using the DraftKings app. Me, not as much, but I'm using it, and I could just use the advice because every bet I make, I absolutely lose. So we'll combine two of our favorite things, gambling and football. Last year, Doug Kazarian from ESPN joined us each and every week, and he joins us right now. Daily Wager, same place, same time, 5 o'clock Central. But now the show is out of Las Vegas, and he joins us on the Corona Hotline right now. Doug, did I get that all correct?
You got it, man, and it's awesome. We have a brand-new studio. It's obviously so exciting, and we're really lucky and fired up for the upcoming season.
You know, really quick, what is Vegas like now? I know that it reopened not too long ago, but how different is the Vegas experience still during this pandemic?
It's a little different. That's a great point. Obviously, you know, there's some hotels that aren't even open, right? So the lights are off at Planet Hollywood, I believe Mirage, Rio. And so some hotels that are open, you know, things are closing earlier. The pool scene, you know, some of these pools close at like 5. The gyms close at like 6. And it's just a little different. Everyone's wearing masks. The casinos, you know, it's going to be interesting to see what happens this coming weekend with the holiday. But it's just a different animal for sure.
But it hasn't affected the overall amount that people are gambling, right?
Well, it depends on the sports book. It depends where you are. So, like, the casinos that typically have a lot more local action, it's the same. But sports books, like whether it be Caesars or MGM properties, it's just not the same, at least in Las Vegas, because they depend so much on tourists. So the handle is a little lower than what they're used to seeing, but there's also a national reach now because of around 20 states that have legalization, so that balances it out.
Let's talk some NFL, and let's talk about some totals. Chris Black, one of our producers, also a host on the radio station, asked an interesting question to us, whether or not we would change our win total for the Bears based on who the quarterback is. Will that change at all, or will any future play on the Bears change, whether it's Foles or Trubisky?
As of now, and everyone I've spoken to, no. It's kind of a wash. But there might be some sharper, more respected money. And if there is an official kind of play on one of the kind of flagged accounts, if you will, people that they think really they respect, they will move it accordingly. So no, according to odds makers, but if bets come in that they think will be different, then they will definitely adjust accordingly.
Doug, where is the win total for the Bears, and how do you feel about where it's set?
You know, it's at 8, and last year they were underachieving because of what season they were coming off of last year. I think it's it starts any time you talk about the Bears and really anyone in this division, you talk about the difficulty of the division, right? Even the Lions, so the bottom, the cellar, so to speak, is higher than in years past. And the ceiling, there is no dominant team. So a word that we throw around a bunch when we talk the NFL is parity. And if you just look at the teams and their win totals, like the Packers is at 8.5, and the Vikings is in that neighborhood as well. So you're just looking at teams. The Vikings are at 9 with a juice to the under. So they're all right there. It's like a three-way almost first place thing for the NFC North. So that's the key there. Now, head-to-head with these other teams is where you're going to kind of get a real official read
on how a team is perceived by odds makers. But you have right now the Packers and Vikings are, depending on the book, around close to 2-1 to win the division. And then the Bears and Lions are at the bottom around 4-1 or so. So it just, I mean, schedule obviously dictates so much. And then your division is such a big part. But I think, you know, I'll ask you guys, when you have two quarterbacks, you have none, right?
Yes. Yes. Well, welcome to our world permanently. Yes.
I do think, I will say this, though, Doug. I think that, you know, if you are one that believes in first place schedules versus last place schedules, maybe the Bears do catch a break with the schedule that they were facing. And if Nick Foles is their quarterback and can limit some of the mistakes that the position has, they've experienced in that position, maybe there is some surprise upside to this season. Maybe they are a 9-win team if things go well.
It absolutely can, right? Because you have the defense. Obviously, every year you have these new coaches, they get a little bit better. So Matt Nagy seemingly is going to have more experience under his belt. But I think the great question is how much of the, you know, no preseason games, the tackling, all that is going to translate at least early in the year in the opener and things along those lines. So it's going to be really hard. And I think we talk about the home field advantage and that the fans aren't going to be there. And what does that mean? And I think it's talking to odds makers. So get this, last year, the road team against the spread had the best cover percentage than any other season in our database. So that means the home field advantage, quote unquote, was not there based on the season results more than any other year. And I think that's because home field advantage, and Waddle, you can speak to this, is just different than we think, because it's not just crowd, it's travel, it's the familiarity of playing at home, weather, and these dome teams going outside. So some of it is fans, like maybe in the dome on a Monday night like the Saints, but so much of it is weather going to Arrowhead in December, not just the crowd noise. And so the travel has become sort of minimized in terms of the difficulty of it, as there's more money put into the sport. We've seen that with European soccer and things along those lines. So I wonder, is the Bear home field advantage that significant, or is it just the same based on weather and, you know, you get a teams that are, you know, just depending on the schedule, you catch certain breaks. And I know when they played the Rams a couple of years ago on Sunday night, Goff was completely inept. He's terrible when it's cold weather and out and late in the year. So just, it's going to be fascinating to see how this all transpire in this, right, in this unique season.
Waddle and I were talking about this. So how will oddsmakers start? It's always, hey, we look at the line, and the home team is always given, like, their three-point favorite. And then you go from there. Like, the home field is worth 3 points. So how do you do that now with no fans and everything like
right.
that?
That old adage of 3 is not really true. I know oddsmakers okay. say it, but they don't really mean it. It's just kind of like an easier thing. So much is based on the number, the key numbers. And we talk about it, guys, like 3, 4, 7, just because of the most common margins of victory. So the number will always trump anything. So, for example, on Cowboys-Rams on Sunday night, so maybe that's not the best example. So when the numbers are around, so like the Lions and Bears, Lions are laying 2.5. If it's 3, with fans, without fans, you're going to get a bunch of money on the Bears plus 3 from the sharp professional money. Because if you think about it, you push at 3. It's so valuable to get that 3. Let's just say you played the game 1,000 times, and for the sake of argument, 25% of the time, the Bears lose by exactly 3. So that means at 2.5, 25% of the time, you're going to lose your bet. But if it's 3, 25% of the time, you're going to push your bet. So it just becomes a much more advantageous play when it's 3 versus not 3. So at 2.5, if they just said all of a sudden, hey, we have a vaccine, we're perfect, COVID no longer exists, and they say fans are going to pack the house in Detroit, that line's not going to move, because 3 is so much more valuable than any fans in the stadium. So key numbers will still trump anything over anything than fans. And it's just the way it is. And it's just so much more important because of the, if you want to visualize a bell curve in terms of the possible outcomes of a game and the margins of victory.
Are there any particular plays that stand out to you right now, Doug, before the NFL season kicks off?
Yeah, there are. And it's just talking to a lot of people that kind of catch my eye. I'm going to tread lightly. And a lot of the math guys are not. They're going to just go all in because the math is the math. And maybe you're going to get a good number. Maybe you're not based on something with like the COVID. You know, we talk about the baseball opening night. Remember the Yankees played the defending champs, the Nationals, and Juan Soto was scratched and the number moved like 25 cents right hours before the first pitch. But sometimes you're going to catch a break the other way. If you had the Nationals there, you get the bad number. And so it just kind of evens it out. So based on season results, there's definitely plays that catch my eye. I'm on Philip Rivers under passing yards. I think this is a Colts team that prides itself on the offensive line, prides itself on running the ball. And I just don't. I think Rivers is not quite a game manager at this stage of his career, but he's not going to be asked to throw a million times like he did for the Chargers running for his life with that offensive line. I think they're a defensive-minded team. I think they're a running attack. T.Y. Hilton doesn't really usually play 16 games, so those are the deep threats. He's going to be hurt a lot. So I think under passing yards for the Colts is a play I'm looking at. I'm also looking at a play with Belichick to win Coach of the Year. If you can get out and get there, you're in the neighborhood of 18-1. Go back to the spring, and when these odds came out, Belichick was the favorite at some sports books because they thought, well, if he can win the division with Stidham and you lose Brady, you know, blah, 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 the Bills are the team. Well, now he has Cam Newton, so the odds, you know, are not 100%. The success of the Patriots is not 100% hinged to Belichick. It's also Cam Newton. So I get that. But if they're plus 180 to win the division, I'd rather get 18-1. That they maybe go 11-5 with Cam Newton or something like that, and he can get Coach of the Year. It's a little bit of sort of a narrative and a buzz with the media. So if you can get that price, the 18-1 payout for what, Belichick to win the division and maybe get double-digit wins, I think that interests me a lot as well. And it depends on how, you know, I mentioned Philip Rivers, but there's a lot of, like, passing touchdowns, rushing and touchdowns. The fantasy guys can have, like, a sort of a strong approach in that regard. But it just depends on where you are with the pandemic. But a lot of the stuff, you don't want to tie up your money for the entire season because you need a full 16 games. And so I would proceed really cautiously because tying up your money and then all the bets will be voided anyway if we don't think we're going to have a full season across the board. So I'm those are the two plays that I personally have. I actually have a third play that Trubisky is going to be the starting quarterback for the Bears week one. Where do you guys sit on this?
We're both with Foles.
My money would go with Foles, but I wouldn't put an amount down that would sting if I lost it.
We think the trust factor, Doug, like a lot of the national guys are like you, where they think, hey, give Trubisky the number two overall pick, the one more try, make sure you know about him before you totally cut ties. We believe they went out to get Foles because they don't trust Mitch and that they just feel better with Foles starting.
Agreed.
I agree, but can you go with Foles to start and then go to Trubisky? Isn't it a lot easier to do the other way?
But this is the way I've answered that, because I heard Brian Billick also make that suggestion. Doug, I felt that if you're worried about the psyche of your backup quarterback, then you've got the wrong backup quarterback. So if you're worried that if Mitch isn't the starter on day one and he's the backup that you'll lose him, then lose him altogether. And by that, I mean just get somebody else in that won't be bothered mentally by being the number two quarterback.
You know, it's great. And I know you guys probably talk about this ad nauseum, but there are bets on that. And you
right.
bet whether Stidham, and this was like a month ago, you can bet Stidham or Cam Newton, things like that. So there are stuff off the grid that's decided week one that's a little bit more interesting than, you know, Ezekiel.
Doug, how much can you bet on that? Because, like, if you're a coach that knows and you could use a surrogate to go make a play, is there a maximum
like
amount? Okay.
Yeah,
I'm just asking. I'm not saying. I'm just asking. So they've got to make it fraud proof.
Yeah, no, it's like $1,000 tops. I would imagine. I don't know it, but they're not, you know, it's funny. You hear about this stuff as the legalization in the early stages, the infancy of legalization, and you get the leagues have seminars and things along those lines. And you, there's a lot of people that don't know these things, and it's important to get this dialogue out there, because I'll tell you what, and I'll remind everyone, the sports books are on the same side as the leagues. They want fairness. They right. want things above board because they don't like insider trading, just like the stock market doesn't want insider trading.
Right.
Now, does it exist? I guarantee you guys that at some point over the last 10 years, there was a college basketball player, maybe even a college football player, that shaved points. Of course it did. I'll take the yes on some game over the last 10 years it happened. But that doesn't mean you cancel betting. Just like there's been insider trading, and that got away with it. You still do Wall Street. There's always going to be unethical and illegal behavior. But if everyone's on board for policing it and having the right framework in mind and doing whatever they can to minimize it, then that's fine. We always have people driving above the speed limit, right?
Yep.
But that doesn't mean you stop driving cars.
Well
you just,
said.
You just have the right, you have cameras, you have radar, you have whatever it is to minimize it and to make sure it's safe. And that I think that's what everyone has to remind themselves is there's always going to be the negative of something. We have alcoholics, we have foodaholics, we have shopaholics, we have everything. There's always something that's bad in excess, but you still have it. And we allow people to be adults.
This has been a good social lesson. I think
good
we've
education.
Talked
yeah.
Yes, I think we've talked ourselves into accepting
sure.
it all.
Really quick, Doug, before we let you go, do you have an NBA player, too, that you really like?
You know, we've been on a little bit of a heater. And it's like we were laughing because when we launched a year and a half ago Daily Wager, the week before, I swear, guys, we were like 26 and like 6 in like best bets. It was so funny. We were laughing. And so we've been doing really well with our picks. Now, fortunately, in this time, we at least do some picks online on the ESPN.com chalk section. But tonight, I've been on the Celtics for games 1 and 2. I think they're the better team. I think they'll become the favorite in game 4. But I would lay it with the Raptors. I lean there for game 3. I'll lay the 1, 1.5. But I think the Clippers blow out the Nuggets. I like first half over, first half team total on the Clippers over. We could see garbage time in the fourth, so I'm going to stick to a first half. I think Clippers score it well. Definitely a flat spot for the Nuggets. Just too quick of a turnaround coming off a dramatic Game 7 win.
Nice.
Love it. Doug Kazarian, great work. We look forward to the football season. Thank you.
Thanks, Doug.
I do, too. Thank you, guys. And, I'm here for any, TED Talks or any anything else you need in terms of, getting your life in order.
Fantastic. Thank you, Doug.
See ya.
Some public service right there from
Thank
Doug
Kazarian.
Yeah, he's great. All right, I want to talk about the NBA from last night, those officiating calls. That's coming up next.
Look for the ComEd lower price sticker at participating retailers near you to save instantly on energy-efficient LED bulbs from the ComEd Energy Efficiency Program. Learn more at ComEd.com/instantly.
Coming up next,
Waddle and Sylvie on ESPN 1000, Chicago's home for sports.
Bring Waddle and Sylvie with you at home or in your office. Just tell your smart speaker to play ESPN 1000.
There's an important news item coming out of the Sox, and then we'll get into the NBA officiating in a little bit because there's so much to get after. Don't know if you saw the tweet, Waddle. Chuck Arfine just sent it out 5 minutes ago. He's been wondering what's wrong with Yoan Moncada. We asked him, and the day before right. we asked Benetti. Yoan Moncada says his body doesn't feel the same since coming down with COVID-19. He feels a lack of energy and strength. It's a very important player
yeah.
who a lot of people thought could have a role and maybe compete for an MVP this year.
I think it goes to show you once again that it affects people differently. So I'm not surprised to hear it. It's unfortunate. It's concerning for sure.
All right, we'll talk about the Sox and Royals. Cubs lose to the Pirates. The latest on the Bears quarterback derby and NBA officiating all coming up in 2 minutes. Thanks to our friends at Legal Rideshare.